Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Lincoln on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update providing up-to-the-minute information on interest rates, loan programs, and hot industry news relating to the mortgage industry. Brought to you by Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level. To participate in today's program, our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now, here is your host of Lincoln on Lending, David Lincoln.
Good to have you with us, everybody. We are excited to have you be a part of the broadcast. Had to switch microphones just as we were starting the broadcast. Don't know about that other line. But anyway, it's good to have you with us. It is Monday, June 29th, and we've got a really important broadcast. We'd like to think every one of our broadcasts are really important, but we've got Mitch Keiter back with us, no stranger to the broadcast, and certainly an industry icon within the industry when it comes to regulatory and litigation related to the regulatory environment. And so we're going to get an update, both on the regulatory side of it, but more with an angle of what's going on with litigation. I've invited Mitch to the broadcast actually a couple, two, 3 weeks ago, and he says, Dave, could we do it on the 29th? Because I'll have some things I'll have worked on that I'll be able to talk about more candidly and open on the broadcast at that point. So he's been defending on a major case. We're going to have some insights into that. Again, he can't speak about all aspects of it, but he'll definitely give us an insight into the climate of it. So we're real honored and fortunate to have Mitch Keiter joining us again on the broadcast. Again, this broadcast is created by mortgage professionals for mortgage professionals, and we're the proud recipient of the Innovation Award. We're honored by having that. Also, a special thank you goes out to United Guaranty, who is our sponsor, one of our sponsors on this broadcast. And we have them talking about really comparing private mortgage insurance to FHA insurance. And you start looking at how FHA cuts rates in January. You know, even considering that, United Guaranty's mortgage insurance premiums for most products and borrowers remain more competitive than even FHA's. And that, again, is after the cut. And with their premium performance plan, or the performance premium-based, risk-based pricing plan, you can be assured that you're getting the appropriate rate for each loan's individual risk profile. It's a really unique way that how they've done the risk profiling on it. Also, you will need to know that you don't have to worry about locking in the borrower into an MIP for a life of loan. The borrower can have a borrower-paid mortgage insurance option, as well as there's other things. And they can cancel. It can be canceled automatically when their loan's LTV reaches 78%. Another advantage. I mean, I tell you, you got to get a hold of your United Guaranty representative to find about all the options that are available. They're very innovative. They're number one in the industry, and it's because of, for this fourth, sixth consecutive year, it's because of these kind of innovations they're putting to work on your behalf. Get a hold of your local representative from United Guaranty. Mortgage insurance underwritten by United Guaranty Residential Insurance Company. Appreciate you guys at UG for being there for with us again for all this time, and we hope to have you for a long, long time. Velma, virtual electronic marketing assistant, is dedicated to help you building a stronger and more profitable relationships. And then I love this part of it. They have it, a set it and forget it kind of auto campaign. Well, you never forget it because they remind you of it, and they're in there working and helping you tweak your message to get the message really refined so it hits the mark. They've got some great metrics for measuring the success of your email campaigns. Check it out at velma.com, www.velma.com. Also, a special thank you always goes out to our regular contributors to the broadcast, Alice, Joe, and Andy. And let's start off with Joe Farr. Interesting day with what's happening in Greece, my friend, and then looking at what would seem, Joe, as a fairly predictable response. We see a flight. I assume it's a flight to quality that's driving rates lower right at the moment.
Well, it is, Dave. It's kind of classic. We got safe assets improving. The 10-year yields are down a good bit. MBS prices are up. Mortgage rates are down. And the stock market's down. So the stock market's down a couple hundred points. And all this happened due to events over the weekend in Greece. We MBS prices this morning at first prices we got at 8 o'clock were up 16/32nds. So it's a big opening, and we've held pretty much steady there. We're currently up about 17/32nds. So not much movement since the open. Now, all this is, as I mentioned, is over the weekend, the news out of Greece, the negotiations failed. Greece has announced a referendum on the subject of austerity measures, and people are viewing this really as a referendum on do they stay in the euro currency or do they get out.
Right.
And so it's going to be held on the 5th, so it's next Sunday. And, you know, until then, I don't know we've got much more movement in our markets as a result of what is going on in Greece. But, it's been a wild ride. Just looking back over the month of June, the first part of the month was the whole month of June was bad for mortgage rates. First part, I think, was more due to the improving economic data. But then starting on about the 10th, we just saw a tremendous amount of volatility, both MBS prices falling significantly and then recovering and falling, and today we're recovering. It's been a wild ride. The economic data that came out today wasn't a big factor, but it was nice to see pending home sales improve a little more than, not quite as much as expected. And it was also interesting to hear today Puerto Rico announced that they cannot pay its debts. It says it has nothing to do with Greece other than Greece is basically the cover for the story, I think. Greece has all the headlines going on right now. So last week it was more of the same. It was all about Greece. Rising expectations for a deal kind of caused mortgage rates to rise, MBS prices to fall toward the end of last week, and as we saw, those expectations were incorrect, and it reversed itself today. The economic data that came out last week was mixed, although the housing data was really pretty good. New and existing home sales were good. Then we saw again today, pending home sales were pretty good as well. Last week, durable orders came out, and they were not as good as expected. In fact, they fell. A small drop in durable orders was expected. It fell more than expected. GDP, first quarter GDP, the last look or the final revision, came out improved over the last estimate.
Yes.
Down 2/10.
Wasn't surprised.
Yeah. Still negative, though.
Still negative, but still better. Not as negative as anticipated there for a while. Yeah.
Core PCE indicated inflation still not a problem. Annual rise of 1.2%, very far below the Fed's target. And consumer sentiment's improving. So, good to see. I think that's weighing in on, the result of strong jobs and it's making consumers feel better, and that's driving the housing activity.
Yep.
So looking at this week, it's a short week. We're off Friday. It's not an early close on Thursday like it often is ahead of a long weekend.
Uh-huh.
But it should be quiet Thursday afternoon anyway. The economic data coming out, the jobs report comes out Thursday morning instead of Friday, obviously. And the other big data this week is ISM index comes out on Wednesday. So. Need to pay attention to those two times.
Lots of good information coming out. Great resource to the industry. You have just one of the best websites, and I like the conciseness which you go through this. And I know you ran through this quickly because you're as excited to get Mitch on the broadcast and talk about what is going on in the whole world of litigation. And so we're excited to get him on. But I just want to public acknowledge, you're the one that really introduced Mitch to this broadcast. You heard him speak at one of the MBA. We knew of him, but you're the one boldly reached out and said, let me see if we can't get Mitch Kiter on. This was a number of years ago. I mean, five years ago.
Been a long time friend and a real valuable person to have on our team when it came to banking issues.
He sure has been, and I'm so excited to have him on. And, folks, we're going to have Mitch on just a little bit in the Hot Topic segment, so stay tuned all the way through. We've got in the batter's box right now, we've got our good friend Paul Mollo. He's back from vacation. I was pleasantly surprised he had time to dial in. We're going to have him on and then jump over to Alice Alvey. Folks, we're going to be right back after this brief break.
Looking for that competitive edge? MBS Quoteland delivers live market coverage for originators. Get up-to-the-minute mortgage market news and analysis as events occur.
Get MBS prices as trades happen.
Straight to your computer, email, cell phone, or PDA. Know in advance when your investors will reprice. Make better lock-float decisions and increase your income. Be the expert your clients expect and know what's moving interest rates right now, tomorrow, and beyond. MBS Quoteline, delivering live market coverage for originators. Learn more about MBS Quoteline today at MBSQuoteLine.com.
MBSQuoteLine.com.
646-716-4972. The Lickin' on Lending Show is back. Here is your host, David Lickin.
It's good to have you with us, and back from vacation also is, I assume you were on vacation, Paul. Was it vacation that you were on?
We were on vacation, Grand Canyon, Bryce Canyon.
Oh.
And in a little place called Las Vegas, which I'd never been to before. I could talk about that for a half hour.
Oh, but, I tell you, between those two canyons, there's some, especially if you, did you see it from the south side or the north side?
North side was excellent. We saw it from the north side. It was less crowded. It was beautiful.
Yes.
Hot, very hot. But it's an amazing part of the country. And if no one's ever been there, who's listening, go see it someday. But maybe go in the fall when it's a little cooler.
I prefer the north side. We had a family vacation there a number of years ago, and it's just, I don't think I'll ever do the south side of the Grand Canyon again. I think it'll be always the north end, just so much prettier. But it's good to have you back, and I'm noticing what's going on. We've got Mitch on the broadcast, Mitch Kider, and we're going to be talking about some breaking news. You may want to stay tuned because you'll want to write about it, that he's just been working on some lawsuits that he's going to be able to talk about, and he delayed coming onto the broadcast until today. So he could talk about some fresh, hot news. So if you could stay tuned to the Hot Topic segment.
Sure.
I know you'll be writing about it. You're always up on the state scoop. And I tell everybody, folks, if you want someone who is on the pulse of what's happening now or even just slightly before the pulse hits, I love that one ad where the emergency people are rolling up into the stadium and say, what are you here for? I said, well, you're about to have a heart attack. I'm going to tell you, I'm here to protect you. So that, I mean, you're the one that tells us what's happening or about to happen. So give us a rundown on your website, www.imfnews.com.
Great, yeah, thanks. There's some interesting stuff going on out there. This morning, Walter Investment Management, which owns GreenTree, pretty large servicer, they adopted a poison pill language. And this comes last week. Baker Street Capital, which is a hedge fund who I know little about and no one knows much about because their website is very bare bones and they don't talk to the press generally. But, you know, they've accumulated a pretty large stake, 22.35%, and, you know, a lot of companies, you know, sometimes they don't mind people buying their shares because it drives up the price. But Walter came out and put some new language out there which prevents anyone from, you know, acquiring much more than 20%. Which is a little late because, you know, Baker's already, you know, got 22.35%,
right.
But they can't really increase that stake much unless they pay a pretty big premium. And that's sort of the long and short of it. Walter, as everyone knows, has been in the headlines because there's a regulatory woes. Their stock got smacked around pretty good earlier in the year. It's sort of halfway between its high and its low. And it's, you know, some analysts have turned negative on the company and others believe it's a good time to buy because its share price is way down, probably below liquidation value. So just an interesting development in that company's history. We crunched some numbers. Securitization of VA jumbo loans is on the rise. That's no surprise. We've been writing all along, VA loan volumes are pretty robust these days. And the big attraction for, you know, a lot of lenders is the fact, and borrowers, is VA loans, no down payment.
Yeah.
Of course, you have to be a member of the military or, you know, have one of those, check off one of those boxes which allows you to get a VA loan. I think children of veterans and active military.
Veterans have the ability.
Yeah. I'm not sure of the details, but that's a big draw for the VA program, especially with home prices going up so much and the down payment is obviously a big issue. Also, another data story about bank holdings of non-agency MBS dwindle. That's not surprising. You know, it's almost like non-prime MBS or, you know, like the bald eagle. You know, there's not much of that stuff left. And this sort of dovetails into, you know, what is the future of companies that have been, you know, their game plan is to service delinquent loans, fix up delinquent loans by, you know, beating down subprime MBS. And let's face it, folks, that business is going away. And there was another company we're going to get more into next week. Wingspan is recently closed their Florida operation. They were built to, you know, service troubled loans, and they're struggling to get more contracts. That's not part of today's daily, but we've written about that recently as well. Prospect Mortgage, by the way, another new story today.
Yep.
This actually came out on Friday. They bought the call center operation of CapWest Mortgage. We don't know how much in loans CapWest was producing, but it's a call center M&A deal, so we threw that on the website. Also, a tally on what's going on with Quicken. They got, faced with sanctions from Washington State for deceptive and misleading ads on VA loans. They claim everything's kosher, and they're trying to fix the problem, and they deny the charges. In the short take section, we go out there and look at what's going on with Fannie and Freddie's. Their earnings for the second quarter are coming up. Rates have risen, and they took some big hedging hits because of falling rates. Now rates have gone up, so we're speculating that they could turn in a pretty good second quarter. G fees are high. Second quarter loan volumes were decent, so we get into that a little bit. And we had some personnel news there as well. Mortgage Network and Ellie Mae are hiring a bit. So that's sort of the long and short of it today, David. So it's good to be back.
Well, lots of good stuff. Always a great resource to the industry and staying on top of things. Paul, it's good to have you back for vacation, my friend. And good to have you back on the broadcast. So listeners, check it out, www.imfnews.com. I appreciate you, Paul. Have a great rest of the day.
Thank you.
Let's shift over another one person returning from vacation, our beloved Alice Alvey. You always bring us the news that we don't always want to hear, but you do it in such a pleasant way, Alice. Good to have you back from Alaska. How was that up there? It's just stunningly beautiful. I've been up there. It's just, what do you say?
We went off. My husband and I went off into some very remote areas down the Kenai Peninsula for sockeye salmon fishing. It was awesome. And then kayaking by the glaciers and all that fun stuff. So, yeah, it was great. Thank you.
Kayaking by the glaciers. We actually water skied in there with dry suits one time just to be crazy when we were young and stupid. So, anyway, it's fun. It's beautiful country, stunning, beautiful. But it's back to reality, Alice, so bring us your reality.
I know.
Have you had a chance to give us a look at things much, or
landing
from vacation?
Right. Well, it's a little hard to jump back in, but I wanted to give everybody three quick heads up, as I know we want to have plenty of time for Mitch Kiter later on in the show.
Yes.
So the quick heads up are a couple of cases that have just recently come out in terms of the Bank Secrecy Act and anti-money laundering. I know a lot of times we look at isn't this a big bank regulation, but the regulators are out there definitely showing their muscle, and we all need to, especially as lenders, need to pay attention to this. We've done several AML audits for clients, and we're finding that, you know, they've given somebody a bank training deck that has one slide about mortgages in it and does nothing but talk about when the law was made and, you know, stuff that's completely unimportant and unusable in your day-to-day transactions for what people need to know about watching for AML and in terms of am I having any kind of fraud risk that needs to potentially be reported to my compliance officer, and really have a process about, you know, identifying challenges within your loans, and that things really do roll up from the front lines to the compliance officer, and the compliance officer makes an assessment, and then is there documentation to support that analysis? Too many companies think it's just about filing a SAR, but ultimately there's much more than that to make sure that you're having the proper detection and assessment way ahead of the actual filing of the SAR. So heads up on that. There are some cases you need to take a look at your programs and make sure you may not have ever had to file a SAR, but you certainly should have that the staff has reported incidences to the compliance officer for assessment. So that's my tip for the day on that one. The consumer complaints are now public at the CFPB website. So if you are not aware of what this means, go ahead and take a look. Take a look at how these complaints are going to appear. Certainly mortgage business is a very big in the forefront at the CFPB comment page and the public comments that appear out there and complaints, and you want to make sure that you understand what are some of the possibilities of what people are, what's appearing, and maybe it's not about your company, but you need to have a plan in place for how would you react if it was your company, and really start to make sure you're prepared in advance. You're not waiting to see that the comment hits your desk And the customer is now, you know, you're being tried in a public forum about a personal comment opinion filed by a consumer, and there's really a lot of story behind it. So be aware, that is now posted. Your compliance people need to be on it. Last but not least is the Supreme Court's disparate impact decision. I'm not sure if that's on Mitch's agenda to talk a little bit about, but
it is.
For me, it is a very big deal. It's something that has long standard been a challenge for lenders to try and identify, because it's almost like I always use the phrase, it's like the water's over the dam before you knew it went over the dam when it comes to, you know, fair lending and trying to look backwards statistically. And then, of course, as your practices, what did you mean to do and what happened inadvertently? And so I'm glad Mitch will talk about that. But with the Supreme Court making this ruling, you now do need to be very well aware of how maybe exceptions to your policies can cause problems or issues with disparate impact. So I'll save that the question for conversation for when Mitch is on the show. And I just want to make sure everyone saw those important things go through, since we have a little more breathing room on TRID. We do see a lot of people who are sleeping a little bit better at night. At least now they have,
for sure.
Their plans might not be completely back on track, but well, at least they know they're not imminent failure within 30 days here. So back to you, Dave, and look forward to talking.
Good. So good to have you back, Alice, and we appreciate you so much. And nothing like having you bring us the reality every week, so good to have you here with us.
Right.
The reality check, One person wrote me yesterday and said, where's the reality check? Is she on vacation? And so anyway, I had one person refer you to that. Good to have you back, folks. We're going to be right back with Sam Garcia, and then a quick update on the Profit Doctor's activities, and we're getting right into the no, Profit Doctors cannot talk to us, but we're going to tell him what he's up to, though. Wouldn't that be interesting? Stay tuned. We'll be right back after this brief break.
If you have questions about mortgage regulations, Indicom Mortgage U has free answers. If you need ideas about how to reinvent your organization, Indicom Mortgage U will share great ideas. When you need help at any step of the loan process, give us a call or send an email. The Indicom team of experts have been helping mortgage players from origination through servicing for over 30 years. Your success is our focus. Whether it's a quick question or long-term support, portfolio, conventional, or government lending, it's a competitive market. So let Indicom Mortgage U give you the edge.
It's so good to have you with us, everyone. Someone just shot me a note, says, Lincoln, I really love this broadcast. You get a lot covered in a short amount of time. And so thank you, listeners, for the compliments. You keep pouring in. And so appreciate it. There's a lot of people really interested. You ought to see the switchboard loaded up big time, the fact we have Mitch back on the broadcast. Let's get in over to our friend Sam Garcia. He just sent me an update on some of the things. I've also got his website up here. But, Sam, good to have you here. Give us a rundown on some of the stories that you're tracking over there at your website, www.mortgagedaily.com. What you got, my friend?
Hey, David, thanks for having me on. We reported on InterThinks' Mortgage Fraud Risk Index, and basically the index was down last year compared to a year before. InterThinks class are characterized the latest index level as nominal, as far as the risk of fraud goes. But it did note in the report that the risk of occupancy fraud and valuation fraud remains elevated. Freddie Mac reported its activity for May, and it said that it had more than $37 billion in purchases and issuances. That was up 2% for the month, and more importantly, it was up more than any month since July 2013. And on the other side of that, 90-day delinquency fell to the lowest level since November 2008. Freddie also put out its economic outlook, and it predicted that there will be $400 billion in second quarter originations. And it turns out that particular quarter, the one we're in now that's about to end, will be higher than any quarter last year, this year, or next year based on the forecast. So that's it. We're at a peak right now. Flagstar reported last week that it hired a new mortgage chief. Leonard Israel was hired to head up the division.
Leonard's there. Is that where Leonard ended up? Oh, good.
Yeah. He's got three decades in the business, including time at City Mortgage and IndyMac. Delinquency was reported last week at 6.45%, and that's the non-current rate, including foreclosures and bankruptcies. That was actually 17 basis points worse than a month earlier, and the deterioration was concentrated on the 30-day rate, excluding foreclosures, so basically newer delinquency. Banks also reported their performance data. The OCC put out its mortgage metrics report. The 30-day delinquency rate on loans serviced by banks, or first mortgages serviced by banks, including foreclosures and bankruptcies, actually fell 10% in the first quarter from the fourth quarter to 5.8%. New foreclosure filings were up in that report, even though repossessions and the foreclosure rate was down. And finally, we reported that there was a former bank CEO and CFO over at Bank of Oswego in Oregon.
Oswego.
Yes. Okay, thank you. They were arrested on Friday, and they're accused of hiding the level of bad loans from their board of directors and the FDIC. So, that's it, man.
That's amazing that people are still doing that kind of stupidity. That's amazing. Well, yes, we have family live there, and they called me about that story. So Lake Oswego, Oregon, really interesting, amazing. But I'd love to know who those executives were and some of that news. And I know we don't need to get into it. But Sam Garcia, thank you so much. I got a nice compliment to you from our good friend there, another fellow Dallasite, Jack Nunnery, who listens to this broadcast, said, you know, I really enjoy some of Sam's information and some of the information he brought out. He says, I love the lineup. You know, when you have two contributors, people doing the news, you and Paul, he said it's a really good compliment. He emailed me right after the broadcast, probably during the broadcast, about some of the things you brought out last week. So, I mean, you get noticed out there, friend. It's good to have you here and some of the statistics and information you bring out. So shout out to Jack and our friends there at TCB Warehouse Facility. They do a great job as well, and it's nice to know that they're listeners of the broadcast.
But well, that's good feedback, and you did a good job of lining up everybody. I mean, you've really got a lot of good people on the show, so thanks for having me on.
They say find something you love to do and you never work another day in your life. I love doing this. It's something fun, and I enjoy the people, and I respect the people, and that's what just means everything. So, my friend, good to talk to you. Go check out Sam Garcia's information, his website, www.mortgagedaily.com, or you can reach Sam on his phone by calling him 214-521-1300. Good to have you, Sam. And
hey,
hope
Dave,
you stay tuned for the rest of Andy, you're there. Good, good. I wanted to make sure we jump over to you, as I know recently my wife's having to consider some surgery, so we're in the doctor's office, and I thought of you as I saw this doctor running up down the hallways, going to every exam room, and was busily doing that. And I know you're on site, and you got your lab coat on, your doctor coat on, so you got to share us a couple of quick hellos, and you're helping companies that are doing well do even better. So.
Well, the point I wanted to make, you know, we've got Joe talking about, oh, my gosh, the markets are volatile, and what about Greece? And Mitch is going to come on and tell us about these fair lending things. And I also talking about disparate impact. And it's like, oh, my gosh, what's next? And I wanted to just remind everybody, mortgage banking is an amazing business. We get to fulfill dreams of homeownership for thousands and thousands of Americans around the country. And that is an amazing privilege in and of itself. And then besides that, and despite all this regulatory stuff, mortgage lending is amazingly profitable. We've got our good friend who's just in the news, you know, Movement Mortgage is doing very well.
Yeah.
We've got companies all across the country who are just nailing it, doing it well. From a return on investment perspective, we've got mortgage companies that are hitting 50, 60, 70% ROI. Or in a banking world, ROE, return on equity. So it's an amazing business. It's a profitable business. It's now becoming even more highly regulated, so do it right the first time. But as you do it right the first time, you can just be a great service to the economy as a whole, a great service to individuals, getting them into homes, and a very profitable business line for your investors. So there you go, Dave. A little bit of
bright
sunniness.
Bright sunniness amidst some of the storm clouds that are rolling across the landscape. Well, I know you've got your patient rooms full, but you're going to be participating in the broadcast or the segment with Mitch here in just a minute. So it's good to have you on the broadcast. Good to have all of you all. We're, as they say here in Texas, good to have all y'all with us. I love that expression. Not from Texas, but I adopted that one. So anyway, we're going to be right back with Mitch Kreider as our Hot Topic guest right after this brief break. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Mortgage Banking Solutions is the preeminent management consulting firm to the residential mortgage lending industry. No other firm in the U.S. offers the menu of services or the level of expertise to the industry.
If you're looking for help converting from best efforts to hedging, or need help with bookkeeping to know your profit per loan,
if you are interested in making the transition from broker to banker, or if you just need a roadmap for success,
Mortgage Banking Solutions' primary focus is to enable executives to take their business to the next level and guide them down a path towards success and profitability. With over 300 combined years of experience in all facets of mortgage lending, the Mortgage Banking Solutions team of professionals has the expertise and know-how to help you accomplish your goals. New warehouse lines of credit,
broker to banker transitions, transitioning to hedging,
financial and accounting services,
or meeting your capitalization needs.
If you need help with these or any other aspects of your business, please contact a Mortgage Banking Solutions sales team to see how we can help you at 512-977-9900. That's 512-977-9900. Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level.
It's good to have you back with us, everybody. Mitch Kreider is no stranger to this broadcast and absolutely no stranger to this industry. He is one of the champions, warriors on behalf of this industry. He is the chairman and managing partner at Wiener Brodsky Kreider PC there in Washington, D.C. We have had Mitch on numerous times. He's a friend of the broadcast, a friend of us, and again, I thank Joe for introducing us so many, many years ago. Mitch was such one of those guys that when you walk up to him, you go, yeah, well, you want to call him? I want to call him. I mean, he's a bit of a celebrity, but here's one of the reasons I am become such an avid Mitch Kreider fan. I told this, and people say, you've told this several times, Dave, but for those of you not heard the story, it bears repeating. We had some clients that were receiving letters from an attorney that were just false. This attorney was representing that he was writing all their clients and gotten information, and they were writing letters to their clients saying, your mortgage lender is in a class action suit. You need to join this suit. Call this number, and we'll tell you whether or not you could get your loan possibly forgiven. So, I mean, it was just a bunch of bunk. It was a marketing scheme. And so our client, I got over calls, 911 calls, as I referred to it over the weekend. This is a number of years ago. And so I called Mitch, and he says, give me the name of that. Forward me that letter. I hate this stuff. He took this on pro bono, folks, and went after this firm and drove them out of business. And I tell you, that kind of advocacy, that kind of fighting for the cause, didn't get paid a dime for that. But that's why I have Mitch Kreider on this. There's many good attorneys out there, no question about it. But I want, when I'm in battle, I want a street fighter with me. So Mitch is a gentleman. He's a scholar. He does not go to litigation first, but he is all about winning and fighting for our behalf. Mitch Kreider, I'm so glad to have you back on the broadcast. It's an honor, my friend.
Great to be here with you, Dave, and thank you for that wonderful introduction.
Well, the reality is you are a champion of our industry. You're respected, and I think it's because you're all about doing what's right and trying to get this thing. And what is right now? You look at what this industry is, and so I really want to start off the broadcast by giving an assessment. You've been in this industry over three decades, and you have watched the climate change so much. So for those that are new to the industry, or they would love, I think our listeners would benefit from saying on a macro basis, how far has the pendulum swung and what is the prospects of it coming back?
Well, that's a great question, and I have been doing this for a long time, for 34 years now, and I think that the pendulum has swung so, so far over that it has to come back. But it's going to come back as a result of court actions. It's going to come back as a result of litigation, unfortunately. It's not going to come back, at least not within the next 2 years or so, as a result of regulators simply recognizing what they're doing. I mean, the reality, Dave, is that the regulatory and litigation environment today has never, ever before been as hostile as it is. That's the truth of the matter. And that hostility is being brought primarily by government agencies, either by the Department of Justice with False Claims Act, lawsuits along with HUD or by the CFPB and new interpretations of 40-year-old statutes that have never been viewed through the same eyes.
It's astounding to see that, like one person said, the pendulum swung so far that I think the grandfather clock is falling over and we're going to have to reset it in a new position to get it back and swinging in the right way. You have a great blog, a newsletter you put out, Special Alert. You put one out last week. And it was titled, U.S. Supreme Uphold Desperate Impact Liability Under Fair Housing Act. And Alice referenced it. And I want to tell people, how can people sign up for your newsletter and get your alerts? They need to. So give us that and then talk about that.
Just send an email over. Just send it over to me, Kiter@thewbskfirm.com, and I'd be happy to put you on our our newsletter alert system, and you'll get it at least once a week. Disparate impact is a big issue, and the Supreme Court, has wanted to hear a disparate impact case for a long time. This is the third case to come up before the court, but the first one to go all the way through a decision. And I think a lot of people in the industry are a little surprised by what the court did, but what the court did was say, in a 5-4 vote, and Justice Kennedy being the swing vote over here, the court concluded that disparate impact is applicable under the Fair Housing Act itself, and that has broad implications for everyone in this industry and for your business practices.
Well, I want to get Alice in on that because she talked about it in her segment about the desperate impact, and then I want to head over to RESPA, but I'm going to let Alice do that. Alice, good to have you back. Go for it.
Hi, Mitch. Great to have you on the show. So, does it change anything? I mean, in reality, the Supreme Court upheld what many lenders have been following. What would you recommend people do differently, if there's anything they need to do differently now?
Well, disparate impact has been imposed by regulators under the Fair Housing Act for quite some time now, and HUD has a rule under the Fair Housing Act that governs an analysis on disparate impact. The manner in which it typically works is it's a statistical analysis. Even if you have a completely facially neutral business rule, it applies to everyone and it applies to everyone the same. Anyone that walks in the door, that rule simply applies. But if statistically it impacts one protected group over others, then you potentially have a disparate impact. And you have to have a very good business reason for anything that you do. For your underwriting overlays, you need to have an airtight business reason for it, because otherwise, if it in fact impacts a minority group or one group over another group, the claim, there's going to be a prima facie case of disparate impact, meaning that in fact it had discriminatory effect. You have the ability to come back and say, no, I had to do this. There was a very legitimate business reason for it. I couldn't make a loan, for example, to someone with a 350 FICO score or something along those particular lines. But whoever is bringing the claim has the benefit of hindsight and saying, well, you know what, we understand that, but here are less discriminatory things you could have done instead. And that's really problematic because you will always be second-guessed.
I want to get over to Alice, over to the RESPA enforcement, but I'm noticing in the press release that it was a split decision, a 5-4. Is there any significance about the vote that went on when it was that close?
Well, ultimately, even when it's 5-4, Dave, it becomes the law of the land.
Right.
And the reality is it's going to stay that way forever. It was a close vote. I mean, the reality is it's a textual argument. The Fair Housing Act, in its specific language, does not have remedies for and does not anticipate that in fact, disparate impact claims will be brought. But five people on the court disagreed. They thought that Congress had sufficient knowledge of disparate impact under that particular act and had agreed and approved to that. And that's basically the law of the land. 5-4, 9-0, doesn't really matter.
Doesn't matter. It's a good point. Alice, back to you on the RESPA enforcement.
So Mitch, what are you hearing today in terms of RESPA enforcement out there today? You know, as we're coming up on the TILA RESPA, I'm assuming that was what we were kind of gearing towards for the, you know, the change in the implementation date for TRID. Do we see that this is going to be, you know, something the CFPB is going after right now ahead of this? And what are we looking at in terms of TRID enforcement in the early parts of the game?
So there are a couple things. Let's start off with the TRID enforcement. I mean, the CFPB has now proposed a delay of the TRID rule until October 3rd. And I think that, you know, the industry has to recognize that given more time to get this together, they better come out of the block on October 3rd with their best foot forward. Compliance is going to be very important. And my guess is that the CFPB is not going to be inclined to hold back on enforcement as they were and as they stated they were inclined to do when the rule was going to take effect in August. Some leniency may be on some close questionable calls itself, but otherwise the reality is RESPA enforcement and TRID enforcement is going to move forward, and the agency and the industry has some more time to adjust to the changes that TRID is calling for and make sure that, in fact, they can get it right on October 3rd. Having said that, though, I will tell you, RESPA enforcement in general, especially Section 8 of RESPA, the anti-kickback and anti-referral fee provisions of RESPA, is a number one priority of the CFPB. And you can see that through a number of their actions. You can see that in the Lighthouse Title consent order that dealt with marketing services agreements. You could see it in the case in which I represented PHH on captive reinsurance and the position that's maintained by the CFPB. These are new. To call it unique would be an understatement, but these are absolutely new, never before heard of interpretations of Section 8 of RESPA that the CFPB is putting forward.
Could you give us a little insights into those two cases? Sorry jumping in here again, Alice, but insights into these two cases, specifically the Lighthouse consent order, and then also to the extent that you can talk about the PHH action. You were in there directly defending them and working with them on it. So I'd love to get some insights into some of the nitty-gritty of that to give our listeners some idea to, when you say unique approach, to say the least. A novel and unique is what you put in your notes to me. I would love to get some insights. What is novel to you and some of the unique aspects of those two cases?
Sure. And most people don't recognize that the approach maintained by the CFPB is pretty much the same in both of those cases. So Lighthouse Title had entered into a number of marketing service agreements with other parties. And the CFPB obviously conducted an investigation and took a look at those particular agreements, which resulted in a consent order that was agreed upon between the CFPB and Lighthouse Title. And the first part of the consent order wasn't anything of a big surprise. It basically, you know, said if you're going to have a marketing service agreement with someone else, you're going to apply it to the general public, the marketing that's done, and not just marketing to specific customers of the party that's providing those particular services, since they, in fact, are a settlement service provider, things of that sort. But then it went on. There were two fascinating paragraphs, paragraph 20 and paragraph 21 of that particular consent order. Paragraph 20 said, even if you're paying the fair market value for the marketing services that are being provided, you are still giving that party that's providing those services a thing of value by giving them a contract to provide marketing services whereby they can get paid. The contract alone is a thing of value, is what that order says. And then paragraph 21 says, and remember, if you're giving them something of value, you can't get referrals back in exchange for that, because that's what Section 8A of RESPA says. No one shall give, no one shall receive a thing of value in exchange for an agreement to refer settlement service business. So a lot of people at first took a look at the Lighthouse agreement and said, it looks like the facts were very bad over here and it doesn't apply to anyone else there. But the position that the CFPB maintained in Lighthouse is this. It's okay to have a marketing service agreement, but you can't get referrals, because if you have a referral arrangement, the CFPB says we're not going to look at Section 8C2 of RESPA. the exception that says that you can pay someone bona fide salary or compensation for the services they render to you or any other payment for goods or facilities. The structure of RESPA for 40 years has been interpreted the same, and mm-hmm. in its writing it hasn't changed either. The statute hasn't changed, and quite frankly, the regulations have not changed since at least 1992. And it said 8A and 8B are your anti-kickback, anti-referral fee provisions, anti-split
right.
of a settlement service fee, but Section 8C provided the exemptions. And 8C2 said, notwithstanding what 8A or 8B says, you still can pay for the reasonable value of goods or facilities that are provided or bona fide compensation for services that are rendered. The unique and novel and really problematic approach that the CFPB is taking as they first led us on to in the Lighthouse title consent order and certainly spelled it out in great detail in the PHH case is 8C2, they say, is irrelevant. And that I'm using
wow.
the words of the director of the CFPB in his decision. He says if there is a referral arrangement, if there is a referral, then 8C2 does not even come into play. It does not apply whatsoever. You can't pay them for goods or services or anything else. You can't otherwise do business with someone that is referring business to you. And that ignores 40 years worth of interpretations.
Yes.
Yeah, it ignores policy statements.
It's one of those things you're astounded by that. Someone just texted me and says, Dave, how does this change some of the marketing relationships that I have going right now that are out there between the realtors and the mortgage companies and how they have some of those things? Does this impact have any impact towards that or implications towards that?
It does. It calls everything into question. It impacts virtually every arrangement that lenders may have with any third parties. It absolutely calls everything into question because what they're saying is, effectively, you cannot do business otherwise with someone, even if you're just paying fair market value for services or they're paying you fair market value for services. You can't do that if, in fact, they're also referring business to you. And that becomes very, very problematic, not to mention the fact that it's contrary to the exact language of their rule. If you go into the rule, Regulation X, that governs RESPA itself, there's actually a provision in there that says referrals are not compensable except under the following circumstances, and then goes on to say that you can, in fact, pay the reasonable value for goods or facilities or compensate someone for services that are rendered.
The only thing I wish is that you were the one in the Supreme Court arguing on behalf of the industry on that one. So it's pretty amazing. PHH, touch on that briefly, and then I'm tossing the phone over to Joe for a real quick thing out of the Department of Justice. So, give us the flavor on the PHH.
Well, the director's decision on PHH was just that. First of all, they're talking about practices that ended back in 2009. They're talking about a company that had a captive reinsurance company. Now, the CFPB came in, and they said, we can go back and we can investigate this. And what he held ultimately was just this. They said, listen, a mortgage company is making referrals to a primary insurer, to a mortgage insurance company. They have a captive over there. So the director says, I'm not even going to look to see whether or not it was reasonable compensation, the amount of the premium that was ceded to the captive reinsurance was the right amount for insurance. Because had he looked at it, he would have seen that it was, in fact, the right amount. There was no problem there. But he said 8C2 doesn't apply. And that's what the PHH case is all about. And now the United States Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia is ultimately going to decide that case.
Wow, it's going to be interesting to see how this all goes. There's so much here, a lot of questions about it. But let's, Joe, get into some of the Department of Justice stuff. Go ahead.
Well, with people coming at the mortgage industry from all areas, none seem more aggressive than the Department of Justice. And Mitch, you mentioned the pendulum swinging, but not for a couple years. I'm assuming that is because it's a very political environment, and that's unlikely to change under the current administration. So what is it that you're seeing the Justice Department unusually aggressive right now, and what's motivating that?
Well, the Justice Department is absolutely unusually aggressive right now. Personally, I think it's motivated by politics, and that is one of the reasons why I think you're not going to see that change dramatically over the next couple of years. The Justice Department is pursuing FHA lenders almost on a wholesale basis under the False Claims Act. Now, the False Claims Act goes all the way back to the Civil War. It was an act, it was enacted because defense contractors were ripping off the union. And so Congress passed an act that said that if you commit fraud or misrepresentation in the submission to the government of a claim for payments, you're liable for treble damages itself. Obviously, it's now applied in virtually all industries and anyone that's doing business with the government. It's been applied in mortgage banking for a long time. In fact, back in my days at HUD in the mid-1980s, I used to work with the Justice Department on these particular cases. But the manner in which it was applied was very different than today. So what's happening today is the Justice Department, working together with HUD's Office of Inspector General, is pursuing lenders not for fraud, not for misrepresentation, but for what they deem to be poor underwriting, for what they deem to be bad underwriting decisions and judgments themselves. And they're investigating them, threatening suits, in some cases filing lawsuits, saying loans that were improperly underwritten, which basically means they disagreed with the underwriting determination that was made. They say those violate HUD guidelines, and therefore, if a loan resulted in foreclosure and a claim to HUD, you're liable to us for treble damages. There are many, many investigations that are ongoing. There are a number of suits that have been filed. There are a number of settlements. Most of the large banks settled up in astronomical numbers over the last couple of years. Now they're moving into, the mid-range tier, smaller companies themselves, and it becomes a little more problematic and a little more interesting because they're playing with companies that don't necessarily have those kinds of funds to just step up and say, okay, I will settle this particular case. So, yes, it's a very, very aggressive Justice Department, fed by the Office of Inspector General. My guess is that many of the program people at the Department of Housing and Urban Development would disagree with this because this is causing lenders to shy away from FHA lending.
You heard Jamie Dimon taking that position, and it sounds like Quicken is kind of taking a position along similar lines. And is there still a document that used to be a CEO and CFO of mortgage companies had to sign an annual certification to HUD that says nothing is wrong?
That's correct. There's still a document on an annual basis when you renew your ability to provide FHA loans. You sign a document that, theoretically says nothing that's wrong. The reality is the Justice Department has tried to, and HUD even on an administrative level, has gone back and looked at those certifications and said, well, you know what, if you did not disclose quality control findings, if you didn't report your quality control findings, if you didn't disclose other state audits and investigations and things of that, that's a false certification in and of itself. Now, Justice has tried to maintain the position that that certification goes and is applicable in False Claims Act suits too. Not too many courts, if any, have in fact signed off on that. That's really an eligibility certification. But what really happens today, Joe, is most lenders will not simply sign that certification. They will press a button in FHA system that says, I cannot certify. And then they'll provide a disclosure listing out anything and everything that's ever occurred in the past year with the company, just to be sure that they will not get hit up with a false certification claim.
Wow. And then that almost, if you're putting everything in there like that, what does that invite?
Yeah, it invites a tremendous amount of scrutiny, And sometimes even worse. Sometimes it invites a situation where you may not get your FHA authority approved, but you really have no choice but to be overly
cautious.
To do
cautious that, yeah.
And in fact, do exactly that. That's correct.
Prophet Doctor, you want to jump in with any questions here?
Oh, hey, Mitch. It's great to have you on the show. Well, I'm just sitting back going, oh, my gosh. As a business owner, I own a mortgage company, and I've got all of these risks. How do I protect myself? What do I do? Simple bottom line, I'm on the phone to Troy Garris. I'm on the phone to Mitch Keiter. Say, guys, look at everything and figure it out. What do you recommend mortgage owners do to address their risk under all of this changing landscape?
Good question.
So, you know, it's a great question, and it really comes down to, you know, compliance being your absolute number one priority. I mean, first and foremost, you have to dot your I's and cross all of your T's. The unfortunate reality is that's not enough, because as you can see from what I just laid out at both the CFPB and the Department of Justice, these are changing interpretations. These things have not gone through notice and comment rulemaking. The industry was not put on notice that the CFPB suddenly believes that Section 8C2 doesn't apply. I mean, that just came out of thin air. The industry wasn't put on notice that the Justice Department was going to make determinations that suddenly bad underwriting in their eyes is fraud or misrepresentation. That came out of thin air as well. So, the only thing that you can do is in fact, stay on top of all of the recent developments. You've got to go to the conferences. You've got to read all the publications
yes.
and the guys that were on your program today. You got to listen to Lickin' on Lending. You've got to listen to all the programs. You've got to stay on top of these things. You've got to read the newsletters, because there's no other way of knowing what's going to happen in there. And the problem is now the compliance costs are enormous.
Enormous.
Tremendous, and it's impacting who can be in this business, who will be in this business, what types of loans they're going to do. And yet you've got to incur those costs, otherwise you can't survive anymore.
You know, we've got Paul Mull
exactly.
still on the line, and I'm going to provide their contact information as I turn on Paul's mic. And, Paul, if you want to come in and ask a question, I'd love to get one more question from
sure.
you here. Yeah, go ahead. Shoot.
Thank you. Hey, Mitch. Yeah, interesting stuff, especially that little thing you said about hitting the button and listing all the things that may have gone wrong in the past year. That's gotta scare a lot of people. But I'm just curious when PHH might file their appeal. Has that been stated yet?
No, PHH has already noticed their particular appeal, and just the other day they filed a motion to stay the effects of the order that was taken. So that appeal is in full swing. We don't have a scheduling order yet, but we should be getting that very soon.
So they filed a motion to stay. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Good.
Good.
Thank
well,
you.
We are out of time. I want to
hey,
love having
David.
Go ahead. Yes,
real
sir.
Real quick,
go.
I'd love Mitch to give us a feel for the Quicken case and how significant
yes.
is it that Quicken
yeah,
is
I was gonna go
fighting against the government.
Well, I think it's great that Quicken took the approach that they did. I think it's really significant on a number of different levels. First of all, I think it was a smart move, because it's obvious that Quicken was going to get sued anyway. And so, you know, by Quicken bringing the case, they got to bring it in the venue that's appropriate for them, and that is Federal District Court in Detroit. And that's where that case should be brought. And they dictate the terms of the litigation. You know, the government's case in Washington has been stayed pending the outcome of the government's motion to dismiss Quicken's case in Detroit. So I think it's good, and I think they make all of the right points in their case. You know, they brought it under the APA, the Administrative Procedures Act, and they did it. They did it properly. If nothing else, it brings light to the situation that we have in front of us right now, and to the fact
yes.
that pendulum has swung so far over
mm-hmm.
that it needs to come back, and that's a good thing.
I was going to go there. Kudos to Bill Emerson and Dan Gilbert for taking the position they did. And it was wise. It was just good chess play in this very complicated chess game that's out there. Folks, thank you. I mean, Mitch, thank you so much. Our folks that are listening here, there's so many people shooting questions. We could go another hour on that, but we just don't really have the time. So I want to say, if you want to get a hold of Mitch Kiter, the best thing for you to do is call him at his office, 202-6. Well, I'll actually give you his direct line number. Is that okay, Mitch?
Sure, absolutely.
202-557-3511, 202-557-3511, or you can email him at Kiter, K-I-D-E-R, at the WBKfirm.com. Mitch, it's just so good to have you back on the broadcast. We appreciate you for all that you're doing for our industry, and I look forward to having you back soon. Appreciate you, man.
Thank you, Dave. That's great.
You betcha. Listeners, we're going to start a new series of broadcasts to talk about technology next week. I look forward to having you back on. We're also going to be touching base, having a special broadcast with Logan Motoshami. We'll be on. We're going to do that tomorrow, touching base on what's going on in the markets. Very interesting discussion. Have a great week, everybody. Look forward to having you back here next week.
This has been Lickin' on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update with your host, David Lickin of Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level. Today's guests were Joe Farr from MBS Quoteline, Andy Schell of Mortgage Banking Solutions, and Alice Alvey, President CMB of Mortgage U. Come by next week, and thank you for listening.